OTB AM on OTB Sports Radio.
Andy Dunn, good morning to you.
Good morning.
How are you getting on?
Very well.
Are you
thank
getting
you.
Sort of excited now at this point? Because it feels like we've been talking about it for years and actually we're nearly there now.
Yeah, I think tomorrow is it's a big moment in the lead up. Yeah, so getting a bit more real.
They're weird games, aren't they? Like, it's almost like you're. It doesn't matter about England. Forget about whatever they're doing, who they're playing, what their game plan is. Like, it's about combinations, it's about tactics, it's about getting through the bloody thing with no more injuries.
Yeah, it's a strange environment. It's not. It's like a necessary evil in the lead up to the World Cup. We have to do it because everybody's doing it. But I think, for me, getting out unscathed and a respectable loss wouldn't be a bad thing. You know, not at all.
At some point. Post that, because we obviously have another couple of big games after that.
Yeah.
At some point soon, like maybe the next game, we start to say, listen, you, and you, get out of here, and we'll see you in Japan.
Yeah, well, I think he's got to make a few calls, obviously, he will be a bit more definitive, I think, after this England game. It's an interesting choice that Eddie Jones went for. He's named his squad very early and just set a stall out. And I suppose the argument for that from Eddie Jones is that there's a clarity of and a sense of purpose with that group now that are in there. They're not just fighting to get on the squad. They know they're going. There's reassurance that they're going and they can really start to zero in on the World Cup. So I think Joe Schmidt was conceded that they're probably a little bit ahead of us in their prep, and that's by design for them. I think Ireland are happy enough to try and peak for 24th September, so they're delaying things a little bit. But that's Joe's approach for now, and
if it works, he'll be a genius.
Exactly. Yeah.
Who's the backup to the backup at 10?
For me, I probably on raw talent, I would say Jack Carty is probably the next in line from Joey. But Ross Byrne has not really put a foot wrong for about a year and a half. Anything that's been asked of him, whether it's to start in big European games for Leinster, he's only I think only one start for Ireland over in against the Italians. So it's an interesting one because from a systems point of view, he's probably a little less talented than Jack Carty, but probably a very good systems operator and very very strong at bringing other players into the game. And probably suits Joe's coaching style maybe that a little bit more. He's less instinctive than Jack Carty, and he will do exactly what Joe wants, and that's obviously a plus in Joe's mind. So for me, in terms of pure talent, I would say Jack is the third best there, but I'm not sure would he actually get selected ahead of Ross.
Yeah, is that Byrne starting tomorrow? Is that, we just take that as a clear indicator that he's ahead in the pecking order?
I would have thought so, because Jack only got that really a brief kind of bit of time against the Italians coming off the bench for Joey, and you would assume would then be next in line to start against England, but he's been leapfrogged, and it's as close to a full starting Irish team as we've seen, we could guess for. So I think, for Ross to start, it's a pretty strong indicator. Yeah, he's leapfrogged Jack, I think.
Talk to us a little bit about the difference between the two of them, because like the stuff we've heard is that like one of them is a very instinct player in Carty versus the sort of euphemisms that you've already been using there in terms of Ross Byrne being that bit of a safer player and maybe more of a Joe Schmidt player. But what are the actual differences between Ross Byrne and Jack Carty?
Jack has probably a better running game. He's more of a threat himself. I think he's probably a little faster off the mark. So I think the inside interior defences probably have to keep an eye on him more. He does things like he chips over defences, he varies how he kicks, he will do what you mightn't expect at given times in terms of his choices, being instinctive, impulsive at times. He might do that from deep in his own half, and he'll be very much someone who'll take on a bit of risk, where Ross will do as is expected of him in terms of the team playing within the shape, playing within the pattern, and he doesn't really vary from that in terms of, say, making an instinctive or impulsive choice. He's a very, very good passer. He's very good. He's very good execution of crossfield kicks. So high crossfield kicks to wingers. He's very, he puts that ball on a sixpence a lot of the time, and an excellent goal kicker. He's probably I would say probably ahead. I'm not sure on the stats. Is he ahead of Jack Carty on success rate with place kicking? But they are quite different players. Yeah, I think Ross's strength is being understated and bringing everyone else into the game very well, particularly at a high level. That's a huge strength because there's a lot of talent around you. Jack's talent, I think, is adding variation and unpredictability to our team game.
Yeah, the latter words is not going to sort of take a box with Josh Smith.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. And I think that's probably why Ross has leapfrogged him for the England game. Yeah,
I don't think we've had you on since the Joey Carberry injury, and you're certainly not on AM anyway. Like, how worried are you about the situation? Like, given the fact that he's had to go under and to suffer a minor procedure, that's what they've said, and the fact that no matter what the situation is, it will be a rusty Joey Carberry, I dare say, going into the World Cup, or certainly an untested Joey Carberry when it comes to warm-up games now.
Well, it's a tricky one to work out. I suppose we've got to take them at face value. The mechanism of injury, typically if us three were out playing five-a-side, the most common injury is people roll their ankle on the outside and they get a big sprain and swells up. That's the ligament complex on the outside of the ankle. Then there's a very small one in between the ankle bones, and then there's one on the inside of the ankle. And the way it happened with Joey in the Italian game, half the Italian forward pack fell from the outside in onto Joey's ankle, which would suggest the injuries on the inside part of his ankle. And from with a physio hat on, that's called the deltoid ligament, which is an umbrella term for three ligaments that are joined together. So it's the strongest ankle ligament we have. So to injure it, it's probably the best one to injure.
Right.
And I was surprised when I heard about the surgical procedure, even though, albeit minor, I suspect, you know, along the lines of almost cosmetic, that it was something to try and stabilise it further to make sure he's right for the World Cup. You know, he obviously looked a bit upset coming off the field, but everything I've heard since is that it's actually not that bad an injury. So, you know, he'll probably be a little rusty going into the World Cup, but I suspect he'll be coming right around week one of the World Cup, and they're going to go with him obviously for the World Cup for his versatility and his talent. I think he'll get away with it in terms of being rusty too.
Yeah, because Schmidt's been talking about that. He said even 9 is an option when it comes to Joey Carberry, let alone 15 and 12, as has been mentioned, I think, by Shane Horgan.
Yeah, I'd love to hear Josh Schmidt mention it as well. I think Shane, it's a very interesting thing Shane Horgan mentioned. I think Joey, I mean, most people when they watch him are a big fan of how he plays. He's not typical in terms of what we see on the rugby field. He glides around. Most guys look kind of heavy set and they've been built in a gym. And
very fluent.
He's just a fluent type of mover. He's a joy to watch. Even in that Italian game, I think he's also learned to be a company man in terms of what Joe would like. He runs those systems very well and then does allow or has earned the right to be expressive through his talent and ability. And he's struck a lovely balance in that now. And that came with a bit of maturity from his year with Munster and getting regular game time. I think that was a very smart move by Schmidt and by Carberry. And I know it annoyed a lot of the Leinster management, but ultimately I think it's helped Joey's game. So I would hope we take it at face value. It isn't that serious an ankle injury. I don't think there's any elaborate cover-up. I think he's... and again, the minor surgical procedure, I would hope to just strengthen that already strong ligament that we've got on the inside of that ankle, and hopefully he recovers well.
Don't want to be kicking the man when he's down, obviously, in terms of the injury, but on the basis that that is the case and he is going to start, what are the shortcomings in Joey Carberry's game? Because we tend to talk a lot about him, his prodigious nature, the, like you say, sort of the Jack Cartyisms, but he's reined himself in to be a Joe Schmidt player. But if I'm targeting him from an opposition point of view, where is he weak?
He doesn't really have any glaring weaknesses in his game. For me, it's more the choices, the selections he makes. So, for example, and I think Johnny Wilkinson is to blame for this, he changed the template for out half play by being so physical. Mm. And, you know, if you look at Tom Brady playing for the Patriots, if anyone comes near him, he just collapses on the floor in a bid to protect himself. And he can't quite do that. It doesn't transfer straight into rugby. But there's absolutely a way for an out-half, a young out-half, to protect yourself and to learn how to avoid danger. And I think he probably doesn't avoid danger enough. I don't think there's any... There was a few queries on, is he, you know, has he got the physical resilience to play international rugby. Now, he absolutely does. He's a physically very strong guy, but he's getting into situations he ought not to be in my view. And I think, again, Johnny Wilkinson, Johnny Sexton, Owen Farrell, they love it and they get stuck in all day long, and that's the nature they've got. But they're kind of ruining it for everyone else. all the other out halves of the world who should be wearing a pink vest in training. You know, I think Joey just needs to find that little bit of a balance, and I think to avoid the really unnecessarily physical challenges. For example, the Italian injury, he could absolutely have stood back and let someone else go into that angle and remained in his position. He could have escorted someone into that position. And I think as you get older as an out half and you have more influence, your teammates, your coaching staff, everyone wants you on the field to run the game. Mm. And particularly under the Joe Schmidt system, it's not like they dilute responsibility. It's like the number 10 runs our game. So they want you on the field for 80 minutes. So I think you'd probably be given a bit of license to do that at times. If it's avoiding a bit of physical contact or getting out of the firing line in defence, then that's a smart move. So that's where I think he needs to evolve in his game. But in terms of any other aspect of his game, his tackling, his footwork, his passing, his goal kicking, his kicking out of hand, his variation, he's elusive. He's got it all. He's top quality.
You mentioned the Shane Horgan comments on the sort of England route of getting Farrell and Ford on the pitch at the same time. New Zealand have done it obviously more recently with Runga and Barrett.
Yeah.
Have we missed a trick now? Should we not have been over the last couple of years spotting this trend and trying to get Sexton and Carberry or whoever it might be on the pitch to vary that, like you mentioned about the 10 running the game, but to ultimately vary that?
Well, I think there's probably still scope for that to happen. For example, you know, Joey can play fullback, and if you look at Mwonga and Barrett, what's happening is Barrett is they're bringing the game into the midfield, which is really smart to work off. So, as if even on this here, if we look at the ball is in midfield, what happens is if you've got currently, if you're attacking from one side of the field, if your ruck is over here, and you've got a glut of players here and your attack is out here, as soon as the ball runs from here, you've 13 people coming at you in a rush defence. It's very hard to manage and play against that. What New Zealand are trying to do is they're trying to bring the ball into midfield, which breaks up these rush defences. It means they can't get as organised. So suddenly, you're never going to attack a line of 13 men. You're going to attack a line of 3 and 4 at a time. And what they're doing is Barrett is taking it on one side as a first receiver and Mwonga on the other. So that immediately puts doubt into this defence. It's very hard for four people to rush as fast and commit to being as fast in defence because they're far more vulnerable. So,
but Ireland can't do that. So Sexton stands here, the opposition know.
At the moment, yeah. So, for example, if we haven't missed, you're saying, have we missed a trick? We haven't done it before, but I don't think it's outlandish to think we could do it in a World Cup. For example, Carberry to play fullback if fit, and have Sexton on one side and Carberry on the other. Both kind of players who can make decisions, I suppose, for attack. Probably more so Joey in terms of off the cuff type of work, but it's certainly a better way to attack than running against the rush defence from the extremities. Certainly that didn't work in the last Six Nations for us at all. So the All Blacks are usually innovators and are ahead of most people, and but England are doing it too. So yeah, it's definitely an option I think we should look at, a la Shane Horgan. I don't think we will.
Doesn't matter actually. Say the difference between Barrett and Farrell is obviously one's a 12, one's a 15 with the numbers on their back.
Yeah,
is that just completely numbers on the back, or is there actually a practical difference there?
In terms of this
precise tactic, doesn't matter if Carberry's a 12, doesn't matter if he's a 15. Can we still execute this regardless?
I think probably the terminology people are using more and more is that person here is called the first receiver, as opposed to the 10, 15, or 12. So you know, with Farrell, with Ford in England, with Mwonga and Barrett, the Aussies did it before with Foley and Kirkley Beale, and you know, lots of, essentially you've got your playmaker and your ball player either side of the ruck as the first receiver, having gone into midfield. Ireland at the moment, it seems all roads run through Johnny at the moment as that first receiver. On this side, we don't, unless Carberry's on the field, we don't have an obvious playmaking option there. Maybe Keith Earls, potentially someone coming in with a bit of experience from wide. Dennis Hickey did it towards the tail end of his career a lot, played at first receiver off rucks for Ireland. So we don't have a clear standout option unless we were to select Carberry in the side with Johnny.
Does this worry you a little bit at all?
I think it does, because the fulcrum of our game running through Johnny is something that is well... it was found out quite a lot in the Six Nations, and it makes us predictable. I think that Joe Schmidt and the management team would counter argue that, look, we didn't win collisions, which slowed our ball down, which made us more predictable again. And if we were to actually go out and win the collisions and get fast ball, we cease to be so predictable because we're playing on the front foot. It's a 6-1, half dozen of the other. To me, I'd much rather see more variation in our attack, more creativity in our attack, and less of a focus around one man or Johnny being a fulcrum and responsible for every single aspect of our play. That does concern me. It doesn't mean he can't do it, and he's done it multiple times on his day, but I just think it's very kind of responsibility heavy on him, you know.
Because you were on with us after the Champions Cup final earlier on this year, saying that Irish rugby needs to really reconsider the whole box kicking game as well. I know it's a separate point here, but it's something that's been discussed obviously in the aftermath of the Italy game. Yeah. Does that give you encouragement at all that Schmidt is rethinking this in terms of being so reliant on the box kicking game?
Well, no. The thing that one of the tactics that alarmed me in the Italian game was we abandoned the box kick for the crossfield kick deep in our own territory. So, and it was clearly a policy because we did it 3 or 4 times in the first 20 minutes. Gordon Darcy spoke about it in the Irish Times article, and it didn't really make a whole lot of sense, no matter what angle you look on it. I mean, if you are prepared to give the ball away in your own 22, at best a 50-50 aerial battle to win it back 5 metres further down the field, albeit across the other side, it's just a strange tactic. I can't quite reason it in any kind of logical sense why we do it. We've replaced the box kick in the Italian game with arguably a more risky surrender of possession 5 yards further down the field on the other side with a 50-50 chance of getting the ball back.
There must be some logic behind it.
Yeah, I can't. There must be. Maybe there's a subtlety we're all missing. But for me, you're better off trying to either keep the ball in hand and attack from deep, because the opposition defence, there's far more space in behind them. Their fullbacks and wingers will drop deep. And, you know, if you want to give the ball away by kicking, would you not give it away 60 metres down the field and trust your defence to run up and have a clean run of things? I suppose you could counter-argue the likes of kicking to Bowden Barrett is a risk, but you know.
Yeah, or backing your own players, I suppose, that they're more than likely going to win the percentage.
Well, it's a pretty high backing to back, you know, Keith Earls to go up against, you know, a 6'5" international winger. And I know Earls, he's not playing tomorrow, but, you know, a crossfield kick to Joe Cockinessinga at 6'5". It's a strong backing of our players to win that ball in the air 5 metres further down the field. So
can I take you back to something?
I'm clearly not a fan of it.
We're getting that.
Yeah. In case there was any grey area there.
Avoidance of doubt. Yeah. We might go back to the taxes board if you will, but I want to take you back to something you just mentioned there about the predictability of Ireland. It was something that Stuart Barnes spoke about when he was on with us during the week, and all too predictable was what he was talking about. Yeah. He was talking about getting Ringrose more involved. And Brian Driscoll talked about it as well. He was saying from what he has heard from within the camp, phase play has got a lot more focus. And I assume there's more to that. But will you take that point up? Because you're obviously in the same camp of feeling we're a little bit too predictable, and how we might, why that is, and how we might change that over the next very short period of time.
I would echo Stewie Barnes. Like, we are predictable. Certainly we have been. I think the whole issue about predictability is that we go to ground early on in most of, so from a set piece, from a scrum or line out, we invariably use that platform to set up a ruck. And to me, that's called a breakdown in rugby. To me, a breakdown is not something to be celebrated. It's like if your car breaks down, I don't celebrate it. You know, and how many times does my car break down? It doesn't
That's
mean
not
it's
the
a
Joe Schmidt
car.
Outlook, though. He doesn't want to offload. He wants to keep the ball as much as possibly can, hit the ground, breakdown, whatever
it's
it is.
Very safe to, it's very safe to hit the ground and recycle possession. It's also, that's about the height of it. It's safe and you hold on to possession. But actually, I think there's the overall trends in the game in the last year would suggest the top teams don't want to have possession all that much. They'd rather defend, and then pick you off when you're tired from running into the brick walls repeatedly. So I'd be concerned that when you hear a comment, even from Brian, saying, look, phase play has got a lot more focused, that it's slightly missing the point. It's like, I'd rather see set piece play get it more focused, that we can break the gain line and have less phase play. Like, if we reduce our phase play, we're going to be more dangerous. Not that we're going to have the same amount of phase play and we're working on making that more threatening. Actually reduce the amount of phase play. And that, to me, that's quite a philosophical shift or a fundamental change in how we play, that I don't anticipate it's going to actually happen. Certainly not in the next few weeks.
Rugby versus let's play something a bit more risky.
Yeah, yeah. Now, pragmatic rugby won us a Grand Slam, you know, and we beat the All Blacks playing the same way at a very, very high level of execution. But it's physically very demanding and tiring. And once teams looked at us and analysed our games from 2018, which they probably would have done in two or three working days, given the level of video analysis and the amount of staff these top teams have, they were able to figure out how we play and put in a plan to stop it. Unfortunately, we just haven't done anything different. We've maintained playing that in a bid to do it better again. So that is a worry, yeah. So I don't know if that answers your question, but where you say Brian is hearing that, you know, phase play has been really well focused on to be more creative in training. I think that's obviously that's a positive, but I'd actually rather see a reduction in phase play.
Is there any sense that, like, what we've seen over the last number of months is, like, Joe Schmidt shifting the Trojan horse up to the gate and saying, listen,
I hope so.
don't worry about that stuff?
Yeah.
Like, because obviously the major concern would be that actually we are in the shit, and that stuff we've seen is actually Ireland, and anything that's been worked on now is tweaking little bits around and just trying to get players fit, that there isn't actually something of greater significance that's coming in terms of a change of philosophy or even a tweak in the style of play, that actually we're going to try and win the World Cup the way that we beat the All Blacks and the way that we won the Grand Slam, which would seem to not be able to now cut it.
Well, if we look at the physical profile of teams, teams are evolving at an alarming rate in the last year. If you look at the Australians, how much they've improved, the South Africans under Erasmus, England under Jones and Wales, that's not to mention the All Blacks. But the one common thread I see is that they're physically huge, all of them, and they're bigger than us physically. So I would love if the Trojan horse was, yeah, we're going to take on the bigger physical teams than us by pretending we're going to be physical and match them, but actually we're going to use the ball and be creative and skillful and elusive, because I think that's what we ought to do given the profile of our team. But I'm not sure. I don't think it's a Trojan horse. I think Joe is pretty, he's a strong believer in what he's doing, and he's, you know, I'm sure he's belligerent in terms of how he wants it implemented, and he wants players to be doing at the very best of their own level. But to me, it's very, very worrying to go into the we have a giant Trojan horse and we're fooling everyone, and actually we're going to change our game plan and catch everyone off guard. I would love that. I would happily eat my hat to be a fool. I really would. But there's nothing to me that suggests we've got a grand master plan. I think Joe's renowned for pulling out, you know, or recycling older plays from that he might have used in 2011 and in one particular match, getting players to hold back, calling that, and the execution of it happens at the optimal time, and everyone goes back to genius mode, and like we've pulled a rabbit out of a hat. To me, I don't think that's a strong enough attacking ideology going into a World Cup to say, right, we're going to be dull, physical, maintain possession, and every once in a while we're going to recycle a move from 7 years ago that people have forgotten about.
There was a tweet off the Ball account 5 days ago from Brian O'Driscoll and Ronan O'Gara last week saying, have Ireland missed a trick by not considering Simon Zeebo for this World Cup? And then yesterday, Simon Zeebo replied to the tweet saying, does a bear, dot, 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 dot.
Yeah, it's a redundant argument. He's not going to the World Cup. It's never going to happen.
That would be one hell of a Trojan horse.
Yes.
Can I ask you a question? What point would that call have to be made?
I would have thought that, as in, sorry.
As in, like, Kearney goes down, Conway's out, oh. Carberry's out, Henshaw's out. Like, how many steps back do we go, get his number?
I would say probably about 9 more.
Right.
I just don't think it's going to happen. I think it's probably a battle of wills and a personality. For example, I'm Joe Schmidt or his management team or his PR and media guys, I'm sure would be aware that that tweet happened. And that alone, it's just not Joe Schmidt's style. He's not going to, wouldn't entertain it. So I would say he'd probably put Tadhg Furlong in there before Simon Zeebo at the moment.
Jeez, you could be onto something.
She's in my
systems.
Well, you know, Tadhg has incredible ability. Yeah. He has incredible ability. Maybe not a rugby fullback, but it's kind of tinged with sadness that a guy like Zeebo, probably playing the best rugby of his career, is not in the World Cup squad. But in keeping in terms of what Joe's philosophy is, I don't think he seeks out unpredictable, creative mavericks. Simon is exactly that.
I think it's like bringing Dermot Connolly back in for the Dubs. Let's not rule it out just yet.
Yeah, and if Schmidt could deliver it as seamlessly as Jim Gavin threw it into a press conference without a flicker of an eyebrow.
Just drop it in.
Yeah.
And the team today is fullback Simon Zeebo.
Yeah, yeah.
We've just seen up on the screen there Tommy Bowe's depth chart of fullback. He was on with us on the show yesterday morning, and he is Jacob Stockdale as a second choice fullback. He says it's Stockdale's favourite position.
Interesting, yeah.
He'll be your second choice fullback.
Probably Joey Carberry, I would have to say, yeah. And maybe Jordan Larmour, third choice. And then Jacob Stockdale. I think Jacob could be a very good fullback coming into the line at pace. But for me, probably if you think back to that chip that was blocked down before he got the famous try against New Zealand, I think we do need a guy who can be pragmatic back at fullback. I'm not sure if Jacob has the game management skills yet to be a fullback. He certainly has the attacking flair, but
Is Henshaw gone from that conversation?
Not in my own little head, but I think he's gone from the international consideration for now. I actually think, Henshaw played vast majority of his earlier rugby at fullback. He cut his teeth at fullback. He was fullback for the Connacht team that won the Pro, was it 12 or Pro 14, whatever it was then. And I think he's very capable of fullback. And we were awful against England. And he was very much highlighted as one of the key reasons we were awful. But he's a very capable footballer. And I would say would back himself and have the confidence to play any international fullback again. He probably, I'd say, has a great desire to do it, but I don't think he's going to be given the chance.
Okay. We've had one comment in here that I do not want an answer to. Paul Connolly on Facebook asking, who's the one player that we can least afford to lose from the World Squad with an injury at Twickenham tomorrow? Don't answer it because it's nothing sure, then we'll have to come back to it. So that's from Paul Connolly. We had a discussion a little earlier on, Andy, about, I don't know if you saw this, James Haskell is going to go to MMA.
I saw it.
And
what?
Fair play to him, he'll be brilliant.
I think he must be a glutton for punishment. I can't see the benefit of anyone going to, not at his age. I mean, he's an impressive physical specimen, but opting to get your head kicked in, having finished a rugby career. I wonder what his wife thinks.
Yeah.
You know, it's out of the frying pan, into the fire.
Must be thrilled.
Yeah. I hope he's getting a hell of a lot of money for it.
I would assume he definitely is.
Yeah.
And plenty of attention as well.
Sure.
We were discussing earlier on about sort of who we would back to. Mine was in Irish context, I went a bit more international. From rugby, one from soccer, one from GA. Players, I went for Stringer.
To go into MMA?
Yeah.
Stringer's a great call, yeah. Little nugget.
Nasty.
Can you bite? Yep. Can you bite ankles in MMA?
He took Lomu down, you know. So
we did, Jesus. And he's—I don't know. I've seen some social media pictures that he posts of himself.
Yeah, he's buff.
He's in pretty impressive condition.
I went for John Walters and Paul Galvin as well. Owen went for Tanu Manga. Who else did you go?
Cormac Costello and Eric Cantona. Cantona, a flying kick specialist.
Yeah, interesting. Jeez, you've caught me. I'm trying.
I'll give a little bit of thinking time.
Umaga on his own may not be the big man. I don't know.
David Obi O'Brien says Pádraig Maher, Roy Keane, and Devin Toner. Devin Toner would not make a good MMA fighter.
Well, you couldn't get near him.
Who would you fancy in MMA? Peter Stringer versus Devin Toner.
Well, Devin Toner.
Well, I'm trying to think how.
You fancy Stringer.
How's he going to choke him out?
Stringer's going to get him on the deck.
He's going to climb up his back, grab him, and choke him out.
Toner, honestly, wouldn't have he'd have no chance.
Well, he wouldn't be able to reach Toner if he just held him off from
just
a distance.
Get him on the deck and it's
scrappy.
Game over.
It's like an absurd WWE storyline, to be quite honest.
we have plenty of more suggestions coming. Anybody, top of your head? Conor Callaghan and GA is another one.
Conor Callaghan, I think, he's
very good.
Ideal physique for it.
Yeah. Plenty more. Shane Long.
Mick Lyons. Remember Mick Lyons? Mick the Bio Lyons, yeah. He made me cry a lot in my early years watching Meath beating Dublin in Key, Leinster.
Any of that Meath team you'd...
Any of that Meath team, actually, from back in the day. Yeah.
So what's going to happen tomorrow? Does it matter, the results, really?
No, I think we're going to lose tomorrow, which doesn't matter one iota. If we can lose respectably, you know, within less than 10 points, and have a reasonable performance and no significant injury, I would take that all day long.
Okay. We will be talking to you much more over the next few weeks. Andy Dunn from Personal Health, Active Aging. Check it out. I'm sure if a quick Google is going to bring up the relevant website.
Personalhealth.ie.
Well, there you go. I don't even need to Google it. Thanks a million for coming in.
Cheers, Adrian.
And enjoy the game tomorrow. It's 30 minutes past 9 on this Friday morning. A quick reminder for you that we kicked off our charity action for Goal yesterday afternoon. Alan Brogan was in studio with Richie. It's all to raise money as part of Goal's fundraising efforts. One single auction lot. You can see it on your screen there if you're watching it. Specially commissioned piece of art, a globe painted by the artist Mark Baker that depicts iconic moments in Dublin football. Plus, you're going to land yourself a couple of tickets for the Ireland football final next weekend. We've a top bid currently of €1,300, so that's where it's at. And to take part, you can just text the word GOAL along with your bid amount and your name to 53106. It'll cost you 30 cents. You can head to goalglobal.org for more information there on GOAL's fundraising efforts. Or indeed, you can just hit us up on Twitter or Facebook, wherever it is you're watching, and we will be in touch. But the bid currently at €1,300. A couple of comments also on Big Johnny Walters, and the obvious one that we failed to mention at any point this morning, says Trevor, GA star to make a crossover into MMA has to be Kieran McGeaney.
Yeah.
What about Brendan Linsky?
Do you remember Brendan Linsky, yeah.
He generally was covered in blood when he played hurling matches.
Yeah.
So, I think he'd suit it quite well. I mean, he's a bit old now. Probably we're talking about him going into management. But back in the day.
Yeah.
He's already made the turnover, though, hasn't he? The switch over. He's already trained with SBG, I think.
He's been training away for 5 or 6 or 7 years Anyway, that's it. We've plenty more to come. We're going to get you an update on the live sport in just a few moments. Back after these.
OTB AM on OTB Sports Radio.